This evening, I wish to speak about one of the most important blessings available to members of the church. They are limited to those who are worthy. I speak of patriarchal blessings. My chief reason for speaking upon this subject is that patriarchal blessings verify of the divinity of Christ and of the truthfulness of the church. These sacred blessings also strengthen the personal testimonies of those worthy persons who are the recipients of such blessings, provided those recipients live so as to merit the blessings which are pronounced therein.
It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic.
Our prophet's words help us better understand the great value of our patriarchal blessing. Sometimes we hear about people who, sensing the need for a little extra spiritual guidance, flip open the scriptures to a random page to see if something stands out. While this method may help occasionally, there is a source of personal direction from the Lord that may be more helpful than the random scripture flip.
Now, just as the Lord provided a Liahona to Lehi, that same Lord provides for you and for me a rare and priceless gift. It will give direction to our lives. It will point out the hazards in our journey. It will chart our course and give us safe passage to our heavenly home. The gift to which I refer is your patriarchal blessing.
You have to believe we are magic. Nothing can stand in our way.
This is Infants on Thrones. Philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund from the tribe of Ephraim, and today is all about patriarchal blessings, or patrioracle blessings, as we've so cleverly titled this, because sacred, formalized fortune-telling is really nothing new. Nope. Have you heard me say anything before about the fingerprints of human creation? Well, this is one of them. So in classical antiquity, or in the olden days, as I used to call it as a kid, an oracle was a person or a group of people who gave wise counsel or prophetic predictions inspired by the gods. Now, the very word oracle comes from the Latin verb orare, which means to speak. Oracles were thought to be portals through which the gods spoke directly to people, and pretty much every culture had some version of this. The Celtics had their druids, the Hindus had their Akashwanis, Tibetan Buddhists have the Nechung Oracle, the African Yoruba have the Babaloos and Lionifes, I can't pronounce it. The Mayas had the Chalanis, or what was called the Mouthpiece of God, and the list goes on and on. So guess what? Mormons really aren't all that different from other religions and other religious cultures in the world. We've got our own version of oracles, and they're called patriarchs. And their primary responsibility is to pronounce blessings upon members of the church. Now, here's what Boyd K. Packer had to say about patriarchs in General Conference 2002.
Then the patriarch, looking into the future, enumerates the blessings and promises, some special, others general, to which the person of a proper lineage is entitled, and through his authority seals them upon him, so that they may be his forever through his faithfulness. That blessing becomes a very personal treasure. Except for members of the immediate family, we should not permit others to read our blessings, nor should we ask others to interpret it.
And of course, if the patriarch looks into the future and sees something that doesn't end up happening the way that we thought that it should, well, don't worry about it, because
sometimes someone will worry because a promise made in a patriarchal blessing is not yet fulfilled. For instance, a blessing may indicate that a member will be married and they do not find a companion. That does not mean that the blessing will go unfulfilled. It is well to know that things happen in the Lord's due time, not always in ours. Things of an eternal nature have no boundaries. From the premortal existence to our existence beyond the veils of death, our life is an eternal life.
And then he also explains the way that a patriarch is chosen and ordained, and makes reference to a guide that all stake presidents and patriarchs are supposed to read.
The stake president submits a name to the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Each name is carefully and prayerfully considered. Once approved, the patriarch is sustained in stake conference and then ordained. He then, with prophetic insight, will pronounce blessings upon the heads of those who come recommended by the bishop of their ward. There's a publication, Information and Suggestions for Patriarchs. It instructs the stake president and the patriarch about this sacred office. The publication was discussed for years by the first presidency and the Quorum of the 12. Each time it was reviewed, it was reduced in size. One senior brother said, "Brethren, we must not get between the Lord and his patriarchs." We now ask each state president and each patriarch to reread this brief document. Read it more than once.
Now, guess what? You're in for a little treat, because I happen to have a copy of the most recent version of this Information and Suggestions for Patriarchs. Do you want me to read it? Okay, number one, set the stage for an intimate, comfortable experience. Establish your priesthood authority by dressing the part, displaying pictures of the brethren and holy temples, and make reference to your own personal fasting and prayer. Number two, project a sympathetic personality. Put the person receiving the blessing in a receptive, cooperative mood by explaining that the blessing is a team effort largely based on their faithfulness and their spiritual preparation. Number three, before the blessing, build relationships of trust and learn about the person you'll be blessing and what they hope to hear from the Lord. Now, there are seven basic things that most people want to know about: marriage, health, money, career, travel, education, and personal ambition. Ask questions about these topics to prepare the member and yourself for the pronouncements you will make. Number four, as you pronounce this blessing, use language that is vague enough to apply to every worthy member of the church. This will make the member feel that they are part of a common heavenly family. Number five, after general statements, hone in on specifics that apply to most members of the church. Consider this as a compass to guide them through the important steps they must take to return to our Heavenly Father's presence to dwell with Him in celestial glory. And this means marriage in the temple and a life full of worthy service to the church. Remind them of the importance of obedience to such commandments as the word of wisdom and the law of tithing. Number six, pronounce blessings upon them based on the information you learned in your earlier conversation. With your hands rested firmly upon their head, pay close attention to their physical response. Listen to their breathing, watch for signs of emotion. Reinforce to them that the emotion that they feel is a confirmation of the truthfulness of this blessing. Number seven, remind the member that this blessing is special and will become their personal set of scriptures. As such, use only the most respectful and poetic language to make the blessing fit this scriptural expectation. Number eight, don't be shy about referencing outside authorities. This could include their ancestors, church leaders, teachers, or educators. Number nine, don't forget the obvious. Flatter the member. Tell them what they want to hear. And number 10, don't forget CYPA. Cover your patriarchal ass. Have your excuses ready. Turn every possible outcome to your advantage by basing these blessings on their personal worthiness, and remind them that the Lord will bestow these upon them in His own way and in His own time. Now that should do the trick. Okay. All right. Now, this isn't actually the church-produced information and suggestions on patriarchs, okay? I tricked you. This is something that I borrowed and adapted from Michael Shermer's Learn to Be a Psychic in 10 Easy Lessons, which you can find on skeptic.com. Now, in all fairness, some of Shermer's 10 points apply very well to the patriarchal blessing experience, but others, well, not so much. And that's mainly because of the form of the patriarchal blessing. It's more of a unilateral pronouncement than the give-and-take conversational style of the psychic reading. Patriarchs aren't exactly psychics. Does that make sense? They're just worthy priesthood-holding fortune tellers. See the difference? So we decided to get together as infants and just talk about our patriarchal blessings. And I think you'll hear this in the discussion, but the more we talked about it, the more we all realize just how deep these blessings had their hooks in us. So listen in as I'm joined by Randy Snyder.
I saw him come. Oh, gosh. His very face.
Bob Caswell.
I would never admit this in the past, but I was always proud of its length because it's a solid four.
And our new friend, Allison.
That's really, it kind of lost a bit of its luster.
To talk all about our patriarchal blessings and to let a little bit more air out of these overinflated balloons. Okay, so let's talk about patriarchal blessings. Bob, you said that yours is the bomb. Why?
You know, I reread it today in preparation for this, and I still, there's a special place in my heart for this document. It meant something to me then. It's still written, or I guess it was actually pronounced, you know, and then typed up because his wife was, you know, the wife of the patriarch is there. They recorded and then she ends up typing it up. That's, I remember that little insignificant detail. I don't know why that's her role as the wife of a patriarch, but it was in my stake anyway. Mm. But mine has all sorts of flowery language. It speaks to me directly. It's very eye-centric. It tells me about, you know, my future wife. It tells me about, my life of abundance and how if I exercise my agency and ask for my desires, not just my needs, God understands that as well. Like some really personal things, at least I thought they were personal at the time, that shaped my approach to, I guess, how I live my life up until I stopped living it subconsciously as a result of this. But, you know, how much of that can really be undone. So I still think it was a good thing in some ways, because there's like one section in here about if you're a problem solver and you go out and figure things out, God will give you the little extra push as you need it, but you need to go solve your own problems first. And so there's like pragmatism, and I can't fault it that much. So that's why I really like it.
How old were you when you got it?
It was right before my mission. It was, I was just turned 19.
Yeah. And where are you in your family? Are you the oldest?
No, I'm number 4 out of 6.
And so, like, your older siblings had all had theirs, and, like, did they share them with you, where you had these built-up expectations?
Or? No, they were very selective about it. In fact, that's part of the whole lore about, for me, for a long time, until I figured it out on my own, I considered my patriarchal blessing almost on the same level as like talking about stuff that happens in the temple, because my family, and I don't know how common this is, was really big into like, you know, don't only share it selectively and if you're inspired, but don't just whip it out and read it or compare it with your roommates, because that's going to diminish it and ruin the effect, so to speak. They wouldn't say it that way. They always said it more eloquently, but I kept it pretty close to the chest, as did they. So they shared it. They shared the experience that they had getting it, but it's the same way people talk to you about the temple and how you're going to love it and all this stuff, but then they don't really give you that much information. That's how I got it.
It's like the opposite of devil stories. Like if you tell devil stories too much, it's going to give Satan power. This is like if you share your patriarchal blessing too much, it loses its sacred power.
Hmm. Yeah, it's true.
It's like the secrecy thing.
I really need to scan this in because it's starting to get torn apart, and I only have this one paper copy, and I was always proud. I would never admit this in the past, but I was always proud of its length because it's a solid 4 pages.
Wow.
You know, so it felt like God really had a plan for me. But, you know.
So
maybe God was just really, like, long-winded with you.
Yeah. telling you, though.
You know what? It's
he, was smoking weed when he gave yours.
I remember when I was getting ready to get mine, or I was talking to my mom about it at some point. She has, my mom's the oldest of eight, and she has a brother just younger than her that left the church. So he was like the black sheep of the family. And she said that his patriarchal blessing was the most beautiful blessing of all of them, you know, that she had ever heard. And that she, so based on that, she developed this theory that the real beautiful ones are the ones that are at the most risk to leave. So I would have interpreted your four pager as like an indication that eventually you're going to do exactly what you ended up doing.
Yeah, because they really needed some strong instruction and encouragement.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened in my family. Is my the first one to leave the church was my older sister, and that's because she got pregnant from her boyfriend from high school, drove out to BYU when she was a freshman at BYU and got her pregnant there, and so she had the drive of shame and she was shamed by my mom, who later apologized and admitted that she had wouldn't let her go to church when she started to show and stuff like that. She got like a beautiful four pager, and then I got a one pager, and it was boring and banal and generic.
It's like getting a stateside mission. It's like,
which happened too.
But my dad would say exactly what you're saying, Glenn. Is he said it's really clear that God tried hard to reach her, you know, just literally like a year before she got pregnant and left the church. You know, son, you know, don't fret that you only got a page. You know, you didn't need as much. And that's kind of the mentality.
I kind of want to read part of this in like a general authority voice or something. And I also have highlights in this thing. Man, this thing was like a big deal, as can be seen, I guess. Back to the other podcast, the Bob's Mormon cred scale. You get 5 points just for getting this document, and maybe that's just as reflective of how much it mattered to me. I don't know if others are so dramatic in how much this dictated their lives. But
yeah, because that was like the only suggestion of ours that you took.
I tweaked some wording on some, but that was the only like net new question I added. That's true. Yeah. As soon as somebody brought it up, I'm like, oh yeah, that was awesome. This should totally count for something.
There's a couple of features of patriarchal blessings that I've always found kind of funny. Number one is you can always spin it. So if, you know, like when we're talking to Tom about his patriarchal blessing, it said he'd serve a foreign mission, and he didn't serve a foreign mission. He served stateside. But, you know, we were like, well, no, but you can say, well, but you still haven't factored in that you might go on a mission when you're old with your wife. You know, and then there'll be someone who gets a patriarchal blessing that says they'll get married and have children, and then they die on their mission. And you go, well, they're going to have children and get married for eternity. It's right. Like,
it'll all work out.
Everything works out if you just spin it the right way.
Yep.
And this was just one more story about my own patriarchal blessing. That's kind of weird. My mom was a piece of work. I mean, she was a believer with every fiber in her being. I would classify her as almost a superstitious believer. Mm. And I had kind of a weird personality trait, and I still have it. And I think it comes from just I have a real strong fear of dying. And I would always tell people, I'm going to die young. I just feel it. I sense I'm going to die young. And I'd say that in front of my mom, and my mom heard that so much that when I got my patriarchal blessing and it said that I would get married and have lots of children, she just, in the middle of it, like just burst out with like this sob. It was distracting. Maybe that's why my blessing was so short. and I asked her, like, what was that about? And she said, it means that you saying all the time that you're going to die young isn't true. And I'm like, and then I thought about it when I was on my mission. I'm like, but you know, that I could still die young, and these things could be true, you know, have children in the eternities. But like my mom took this as the literal word from her Almighty God.
Right.
Like it was real as shit for her.
Yeah. Wow.
And Bob, before you read yours, let's hear from Allison. Like what was your experience? Because you were a convert to the church And so you didn't grow up hearing all of the patriarchal blessing stories or the reverence or all of that, that Bob and Randy have talked about. What was your first introduction to the idea of a patriarchal blessing? Do you remember that?
I was serving in Young Women's, and I had we'd had our first child, and he was about one or two, and I was serving in Young Women's, and they were doing like the fireside where you prepare, you hear the bishop speak about getting your patriarchal blessing. Mm-hmm.
And then bring in the patriarch to talk to the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went to that because I was in Young Women's, and the leaders went. And I was just like, well, I don't have one of these. I got to get one.
Was that the first time you'd even heard of it? You were like,
yeah,
whoa, what is
so.
This?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I may have heard of it before, but I don't think it registered or, you know. And so I went to get it. And before the blessing, and you know, you meet with the patriarch, and they kind of chat with you a little bit. Like, well, he asked me, you know, how's your life? What are you guys doing right now?
It's almost like he's trying to cold read you before he has to give the blessing.
Was.
He
is. And so he was, you know, we told him, well, we're trying to sell our house and move into a new house, but it's really hard. The market is so bad right now. You know, it's really, really stressful. And so we're dealing with that. And he's like, oh yeah. What's your calling right now? Well, I'm in Young Women's and I love it. I love this calling. I love working with the girls and the other women leaders. And oh, okay. Interesting. And you have how many children? Oh, we have one child. Oh, that's great. How old? 1 year old. Oh, that's wonderful, sister. Well, let's get to the blessing, you know? And then my blessing was all full of this stuff. Like, you don't need to worry about temporal things because the Lord will provide for you. So don't worry about those things.
Was it conditional, and though? Like, if you obey the commandments?
All of it's conditional. Yeah. All of it's conditional. But that spoke to, you know, that I was stressed about our house. To me, like even right after I got it. Well, okay. So here's what happened. He did all these things. He said some other things like you will, you have a great capacity to serve, especially with women in the church, and you will do that, and it will be wonderful, and you'll affect a lot of people's lives and be a leader in that way, and you will have more children. And so at the time I was incredibly moved because I was like, well, these are the things I want to hear. This is what I need to hear. I need to hear that I don't need to worry about, you know, our house selling. I need to hear that I am going to be a good leader and work with women. And I need to hear that I am going to have more kids. And so it was like,
so you weren't skeptical at all. You just
not
like,
at first. Yeah. I mean, I was, when he was giving me the blessing, I was sobbing the whole time. I was just like, oh my God, this is so powerful that how could he know that these are the things that I need to hear? And then afterwards, you know, they mail it to you, and I read it and I was like, well, that's, you know, it was still special to me, but I was like, but he talked to me about those things before. And it's really, it kind of lost a bit of its luster pretty quickly. Because I was like, well, I told him, you know, I told him these were my worries. And I told him I was a convert, and he had talked about how I was going to be a missionary in, you know, in heaven. I think it was like, you're going to bring a lot of souls, or through family history or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was really important to me. But then I read it and I was like, well, I told him I'm a convert. I'm the only member of my family. So of course that's what he's going to say.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you addressed, I was going to ask that specifically because I know in mine, and I've read a lot of patriarchal blessings that they usually talk, if someone's born in the covenant, about, mm-hmm. you know, this heritage that they're a part of, and all of the blessings that they're inheriting, and what are some of the other things? Like Randy and Bob, you've probably got this kind of language in yours that you should be grateful for your parents and ancestors going before you. Whereas with a convert, I think it would be more focused on the proxy ordinances.
Yeah, and there's another aspect of the second one I was going to bring up was people reading something that really is pretty banal and really kind of like a platitude, uh-huh. but really, like they do with the scriptures, really reading way deeper into it to get more meaning out of it. Mm-hmm. I think mine said I was going to travel the world, and I thought, wow, maybe that means I'm going to be a general authority.
Yeah.
Good. I could just be a guy who makes enough money to travel.
Yeah.
And I like to travel, you know, or it's just him saying, you know, whatever popped into his head. And we do that with scriptures all the time. Like, there's just not much there, but we'll sit there and dissect two verses and just that's like a total Mormon thing to do, and extrapolate all this meaning out of it.
But that's the thing, though, is that this is like the best of both worlds, because it is treated like scripture, but it's given in a modern day tongue, and it's like real sentence structure and flowery language, at least mine, to the point where, I mean, I'm sure if I looked at it more closely and the more we talk about it, the more cynical I'm becoming. But there's still like a part of me that's like, this is like a holy document that people just don't understand. It's poetry.
And it is kind of hard, because I had that type of a connection with my patriarchal blessing as well, that it's hard to distance yourself from that and trot it underfoot, you know, or for you to be one of the swine that this pearl is being cast before, you know, that's kind of a tricky transition for me to make. It took a while before I realized exactly how deeply my patriarchal blessing had its claws in my life, and the decisions that I had made. Like, I came to Indiana University to get a PhD in folklore. What the hell are you going to do with a PhD in folklore? I had no idea, but my patriarchal blessing has a line in it that says, get as much education as you can. You will need it in the future. You will need it in ways that today perhaps you know not of. And so because it said that, I was just like, I don't know why.
You're checking all the boxes.
You know, getting a PhD, I might get another degree after that. I'll just keep going and wait and see what the Lord has planned for me. It's going to be awesome, and I don't have to understand what it is right now. And it was just stupid.
And that's why you deserve a lot of Mormon cred for it. I mean, you get this, and maybe not everyone takes it to heart as you and I did, Glenn, yeah. But I resonate with that quite a bit. There are a lot of things in here. Rereading it, I'm like, oh, is that where that came from, right, that I still do to this day? That's embarrassing. Right.
Has anyone heard anecdotes? And I have, and I can't verify that they're true, and I don't know who they are. But people making really, really bad decisions based on what their patriarchal blessing said.
Remember when I just said about a PhD in folklore from Indiana University?
Yeah. Besides that.
It worked out all right, but yeah.
I'm talking about a little bit more tragic stories.
Well, I could talk about my first marriage too, but we don't need to go there.
Oh. Well, I think the thing I wanted to get this is, like, you know, psychics aren't necessarily harmless. I don't think that the patriarchal blessing is necessarily harmless. I think if you get a patriarch that really overreaches and tries to get too specific, they could really fuck with somebody's life. So I think
they all do in a small way. I mean, just in that, especially people like me, maybe like you, Bob, that are really ambitious and want to feel very holier than thou and self-righteous, you know, that it gives mm-hmm. you the opportunity. And this is something that I've always felt is a real stroke of brilliance with Mormonism, that it makes every member the center of the universe. And, you know, as far as like providing meaning in life and direction, and I think the patriarchal blessing is such a huge part of that, that it really brings you in, and you're invested in this. And there's so much grandiose, flowery language about how special you are and how special the mission is that you have, a unique, special mission to fulfill. And it isn't until you step back and really do what you're not supposed to do and compare all of the patriarchal blessings to each other that you see the pattern.
Right. And I'm sure even my patriarch, who I assume, you know, was doing these all very specifically for each person individually. In the upper right corner of the first page, it says patriarchal blessing number 223. Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a lot of experience. He probably has a good pattern system down. Mm-hmm. And if I were to actually get 222 in my hands,
yeah,
I'd probably,
but you
like,
You know, they start that number like checkbooks. Like, they got to start it at 100 at least. They're not going to start at 1.
Quit ruining it for me, Allison.
Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome if you got patriarchal blessing number 001?
You know what? Actually, Bob's patriarch was so prophetic that he started at 1,000 and was working his way down to 0.
Wow. He knew what his life calling was.
He knew
was.
Exactly who was going to be the last one.
He got called for exactly 1,000 blessings.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And then he would die. No, right. He'd be translated.
Exactly. Twinkling of an eye.
But listen to some of this language. Speaking of Glenn's point that it's a little bit self-centered.
Yeah.
Your Father in heaven is aware of your valiance in the pre-existence. He is aware of the good that you have already done here upon the earth. He knows you by name. He loves you. He loves all of his sons and daughters. He will be pleased to bless your life. Develop a strong conviction that all of this is true. Know that he will be pleased for you to approach him frequently and regularly in prayer, that you consider him to be an unfailing partner to help you in your life. He has at least 2 major considerations which he uses in responding to your prayers. One of these considerations is that you live to be worthy of the blessings that you request. The other one is also very important. It is that you use your agency in asking. Remember to ask for that which you desire or need. He wants you to gain increasing experience in the use of your agency, that you might grow to become more like he is. That's just one paragraph out of like 12.
See, and like
isn't that called purple prose, Glenn?
I don't know purple prose. It's the Barnum effect, where that could be applied to anybody. Like, I bet every single patriarchal blessing has comparable language and, you know, this grandiose, elevated message that you feel is directed specifically to you. But it's just...
Yeah, like you and God,
it's just saying,
you and God are best buddies.
It's saying, be obedient and say your prayers.
You just, like, crushed part of my soul.
Yeah, the air goes out of the balloon. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Well, my husband is interesting. He got his in the South, and it's not flowery, but it's like there's parts of it that are just like kind of weird. Like there's one part that says, I bless you that you will go to your Father in heaven on your knees and inquire of him as to what he would have you do with the remainder of your life. Listen to the sweet spirit. Your father will probably tell you to complete your education. Because an education makes good people better. And it's like, wait, what? Probably?
Yeah, that's
equal
funny.
Chance.
It'll probably make you smarter.
That's funny.
Yeah, like you can just hear the accent coming
probably.
Out a little bit.
He'll probably.
It's just different. And then he talks a lot about like the word. He mentions like 2 or 3 times the word of wisdom, and he needs to, you know, obey the word of wisdom. And it was interesting how he got his, because his parents... so, you know, he was like a teenager kind of black sheep. He had long hair. He wore like, you know, he kind of was a little punk rock, I guess. And, I think his parents were really worried about him. And so they just one day were like, we're going to get your patriarchal blessing today. And they just like took him to go get it. And he was still going to church and everything, but, it just is weird that it happened that way. And then in his blessing, it says that, and I was curious if your guys' says anything like this, because mine doesn't. It says, I pray for the Spirit of Father in heaven to be in attendance with us as we have fasted and prayed for the Spirit to be with us. I would have you know that I pray that this blessing will be. And he just talks about how he fasted and prayed before. And I didn't know if that's a common thing for the patriarchs to do, or if that means his family was fasting and praying, and that's why, like, all of a sudden they decided to just take him to get it because they were worried about him.
I've heard that.
Teenager.
I've heard that fasting can go along with it. I don't remember with mine specifically.
I did.
I fasted.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
So that's, like, a common thing, and I'm just reading into that.
I don't know how common...
I think I was told to.
Yeah, I don't know how common it is for that language to be in the blessing itself, but to be surrounding it, the experience, and to frame it in a context, I think it's very common that you're encouraged to... to pray a lot, read your scriptures a lot, fast a lot, just to try and get in tune with all of these amazing blessings that are going to be poured out upon you.
Yeah.
And even the patriarch will say, you know, I have fasted today, or I've prayed today, so that, you know, I'll be a good conduit for the Spirit. And yeah, I think that's pretty common.
Okay. And then there's another interesting part in his that I wanted to read. It says, I bless you that you'll have a goal that you shall not marry out of the covenant, that you'll find the beautiful young lady, that you'll take her by the hand, and she will lead you to
the promised land.
And she will lead your family to the celestial kingdom of our Father in heaven. You're responsible for working out your soul salvation. Nothing short of a temple marriage will do, for you must reach the celestial kingdom to be happy, and you must go this route to reach the celestial kingdom. And I just thought that that was like pretty strong language. Mine doesn't say anything that strong.
About getting married?
About that you must reach the celestial kingdom to be happy, and you must go this route in order to reach the celestial kingdom, meaning that he must marry in the covenant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was a Southerner, so he's very practical minded.
Okay.
And he's like, hey, I've been told this is the way to go. You got to go this way.
Well, was your husband dating you when he got the patriarchal blessing? And that was part of the thing, part of what his parents were concerned about.
He was not dating me, but he was dating another girl who was also not Mormon. Okay. But we were we had dated at the time.
Did
the patriarch know he was dating a Gentile?
I don't know.
The parents may
have
told him.
Just the way that I think his mom and dad must have had some conversations, just because of how it was like there was no prep for him. Like, hey, do you think it's time to go get your blessing? It was obviously something that he wasn't really interested in doing.
But it's also pretty standard language. You know, I think everybody's patriarchal blessing says you're going to marry somebody in the temple. And whether you say that married in the temple or in the covenant or, you know, something about the blessings that come and bringing children into the world and righteousness. Anyway, what did you want to say, Randy?
I was going to say, I just looked up Purple Prose and literary criticism.
Thank you.
Tell me if this doesn't apply, though. In literary criticism, purple prose is written prose that is so extravagant, ornate, or flowery as to break the flow and draw excessive attention to itself. It employs certain rhetorical effects, such as exaggerated sentiment or pathos, in an attempt to manipulate a reader's response.
Yeah, I think it does those things, but I don't think that it distracts. I think it enhances.
Right, because there's still something very on point here. It's not like when I read mine, it's not like there's nothing to be said. There's still a very specific message. It just so happens that it's the same message for everyone in the blasted church, not just for me, but I read it as it's only for me.
Yeah, but okay, well, it depends on the reader. I think it still qualifies as purple prose, but not to a true believing Mormon, because that's how they've been taught that truth is conveyed, is with purple prose. But you have someone like Mark Twain read a patriarchal blessing, and he's going to go, oh, God, right. This is awful.
Yeah, yeah.
This is distracting.
Yeah, that's what, like, when you were reading yours, Bob, I, like, lost track. I couldn't.
Yeah. You're like, this is too
much. I pay attention to what it was saying.
I did not even listen to what it was saying. I got distracted by how it was conveyed. And that's why I was like, that's why purple prose came to my mind, because it was really distracting.
See, I thought it was like mother's milk.
Yeah. Hot Chili Peppers?
Could be.
Yeah. my closing paragraph is just a couple sentences. I think it was like some of the most powerful stuff for me, so I'm just going to read it really fast. So, and I'll do a slightly different voice so you're not too drawn in by that. But
Do it with a southern twang. and say throw in a couple of probablys.
No, Utah accent.
When the time is appropriate, Robert. No, I don't think.
No, it's not working. It's not, no,
that was pretty good, actually. I thought that was better than Randy's.
Ouch.
So when the time is appropriate, Robert, the Lord will call you forth in the first resurrection to stand before him with your wife to receive your eternal inheritance, which will include immortality and eternal lives. You'll be privileged to go on through eternity, progressing and experiencing great joy and happiness in the presence of your loved ones, who will call you blessed, and in the presence of the Lord. again, all of these things depend on your faithfulness and obedience. Live for them. Be cheerful. Be happy. Have a great and abundant life. These things I say to you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Nanu, nanu.
Your patriarch was just a long-winded blowhard. I mean, he was like, have you ever been to those ceilings where the patriarch just won't shut up? You know, because the ceiling's like 10 seconds. And then the sealer has to like then give like a sermon. And some patriarchs some sealers are decent and considerate. And some patriarchs, I keep saying patriarchs, some sealers just go on and pontificate and use flowery language. And even believers start to glaze over their eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But this message here, like, it was so impactful on me for some reason. The fact that, like, there's so many things to pick apart, like immortality, eternal life, okay, everybody gets that, but I remember feeling really special about, like, you know, somehow the way that I'm so privileged to go through eternity still progressing, and my loved ones are surrounding me, calling me blessed all the time. And it's just, I think back and I'm like, why did I like this so much? This is disturbing. But it's just the way it is.
But that he just basically described what every Mormon's destiny is.
Yeah.
And he just took a really long time to say it. But I guess because it was especially for you, and you were kind of, your brain was formed in that kind of context. That's why you got to give yourself a pass on that.
I think so. But then there are like the section where he says you will have an abundant life. That was like, well, not everyone's going to get that right. But then it says, you know, work for it, but believe in the fact that it will come to you. Solve your problems. Be always grateful to the Lord for the good that comes to you. And I really, like, ate this up because I really thought that, especially earlier in my 20s, like, I would make it big. I could, you know, start my own company or do something in an entrepreneurial way. And I did those things, and I did okay, but I didn't retire at 35. I'm still
not abundant.
A job. Yeah.
Not abundant.
Still working on that nest egg there. You know,
and there's a million ways you could define abundant too. Yeah. Like maybe it wasn't talking about money. Maybe it was talking about you're going to have a lot of kids or
you're going to get really fat.
The irony being that like I go straight for the material, you know, wealth. And then Allison is like, or you could have kids.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem abundant. That sounds exhausting.
Or abundant in that you have a lot of great callings and serve a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. You guys just keep ruining it one step. But
that, again, that's that Barnum effect, you know, named after Barnum and Bailey, where you show this magnificent thing that's so wide in general, and it could apply to anybody, but you let the person who's receiving it pick and choose the way they're going to interpret it and make it special and unique to them. Do any of you guys have anything in your blessings that you feel is like really unique?
You mean other than what I just... No, just kidding. I know it wasn't that unique.
Because I do. And I don't have mine in front of me because I couldn't find it. But I have something that says, get to know your brethren of the other tribes, for in due time you'll come to know them and to work with their culture.
And then you
maybe
go to
that's
Japan.
That's the folk tale thing.
Yeah. Is that a common thing that people are promised that they're going to work with the other tribes of Israel?
I've never heard of that.
I've never heard. That's a pretty good one. That's as close to unique as we're going to get tonight,
I think so.
It sounds like.
I think it is.
Yeah, but hey, Glenn, do you think that had any effect on your obsession with the Japanese being a lost tribe of Israel?
Yeah, and I was so embarrassed by it, too. You know, like because I wrote that as my master's thesis in my folklore program, but I had to appear like I wasn't a believer, and so it was this closeted hope that I had, you know, that even though I was approaching this as a very skeptical academic, that maybe this really is what I'm supposed to be doing, and maybe I'm going to stumble across something, you know, because I remember being in my first area on my mission. We went for a hike one day, and I was standing on top of this hill, and I was looking out at the town that I was serving in, and all these hills, there are all these little hills, and I thought, in one of these there might be some golden plates, just like there was in the Hill Cumorah.
Wow.
And, you know, because the lost tribes of Israel, Jesus came and visited them. They wrote down their record. And, you know, the DNC says that when the lost tribes come back, they're going to bring the records that they have and we'll add it to our scriptures. And
Glenn, did you ever tell anybody about that, or did you just kind of keep that thought to yourself?
Oh, I kept it. I'm just curious. I kept it to myself. Yeah,
because I would just be curious to how people would receive that. Like if they laugh at it, and then but that's what Joseph Smith did. So, like, why would it be funny?
Yeah,
you know.
Well,
but you didn't tell anybody about
it. No, because you don't want other people to know that you got your eye on the gold ring. You know that you're like, I could be the next prophet, y'all. You know, I could restore a church like Joseph Smith restored. You know, I could bring scripture and I could translate stuff and I could be really big shit, you guys. So back off. You know, like it wouldn't go over well. And so it was one of those things that I kind of kept close to the vest. And then especially years later when I was in a graduate program at a university that wasn't a church-owned university. So I had to kind of bury any indication that I even wanted to believe it. You know, that was tricky for me. But so yeah, Randy, it definitely played a role. And we did some comparisons in the MTC. There was one sister Harris that, her patriarchal blessing told her that she would learn a language on her mission that would help her to read the scriptures that the lost tribes brought back, something to that effect. And maybe it was just interpreted that way. I don't know. But so we took it and we're just like, yeah, okay, you guys, this is real. This is real.
This is happening.
This is real. We're on the front lines and something big is going to happen. We're going to be right there for it. It was exciting.
My husband says something about you will be blessed with the ability to communicate through music. That's pretty specific.
That's pretty cool, actually. Yeah, I would have loved that.
Speaking to a talent of his.
He did love it. Yeah. And here's the funny thing is that I always used to get on him because he would write these like really angry rock songs, like just screaming. And he still does. And I think they're awesome. But at the time, as a Mormon, I would be like, doesn't your patriarchal blessings say you communicate through music? Like maybe if you communicate about the gospel, you'll actually become famous. Like you should write
screaming,
a song.
Screaming about the gospel.
No, not screaming, but that he should like write. He should write church music.
Christian rock.
Like he should. Yeah. Like he should be the next. I don't know. Who's, yeah.
What did you say, Randy?
To me, thank God.
Like Afterglow?
Oh, Afterglow.
No, Afterglow. Yeah.
The funniest, unintentionally funny name of any singing group of all time. And then they sing, I saw him come.
Oh, gosh.
His very face. It's like they have no clue how funny they are.
Thanks for that, Randy.
Nice.
He never listened to me on the church music. Thank goodness.
Did he play an instrument though? Was he musically inclined?
Yeah, at the time. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
At the time.
No. Sorry, that came out wrong. He is now, but when he was a teenager, he also was. Still.
Do any of your blessings have like the Satan paragraph? Or is it just mine? This kind of.
What's the Satan paragraph?
Maybe if you refresh my memory.
It's just like a little like dagger in the side, just like, we got a gun to your head.
Don't forget.
Mind fuck alert.
Don't forget.
Here we go.
You got to be good or somebody's going to sift
really,
you like wheat.
This really messed with me because it was pretty specific in my temptations, I suppose, or at least I internalized it that way. So it says, Satan will seek to overcome you. He does this with everyone who comes to earth. When temptations are placed in your path, one of the most secure ways of solving that problem is for you to do as did Joseph in Egypt, who fled when he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. Remember this. Get yourself away from temptation. Ask the Lord to strengthen you against the power of Satan, which is circled now. At some point in my life, I circled the word Satan. He can have no power over you except as you might choose to permit him to do so. Do not experiment with sin, which is underscored now. So I don't know how you guys read that, but that was the don't jerk off paragraph from my patriarchal blessing.
Really? That's how you... I would not have taken that way at all.
He mentioned Potiphar's... It's obviously he's contextualizing it in a sexual way.
Yep.
You know, he mentioned... One example is a woman who wanted to have sex with Joseph.
And he had to run away and not experiment with sin. And, you know, Satan doesn't have power over you unless you let him. Don't even mess with it. Stay as far away from it as possible. Like,
that's all about sex.
Yeah.
Well, sex, yes. Masturbation specifically, I wouldn't. I'm just saying that my mind wouldn't have gone there.
Your mind.
Yeah, it wouldn't have.
Yeah, it's your mind.
Yeah, I know. And it wouldn't have.
I didn't have a Satan or masturbation paragraph.
Neither.
I probably could have used one, apparently.
Neither nor, yeah. Okay.
Did you guys ever hear the rumors of... I heard two really pervasive rumors when I was on my mission. And maybe it's because I served from 93 to 95, and we were only like, you know, a few short years away from the year 2000 when a lot of people stood, you know, thought that was going to be the second coming. But I heard rumors about guys getting patriarchal blessings that say they're going to be called home from their mission to defend the Constitution. And the other one was, you are going to live to see the second coming of the Lord.
Well, there were also the variations of that where they were going to be one of the two prophets in the streets of Jerusalem during Armageddon or whatever.
I have a story about that, yeah.
Yeah?
That's crazy.
I have a... In mine, it says that I'll be present in the morning of the first resurrection. Does that sound...
Yeah, but that could be long after.
Okay,
your death.
But here's the funny thing. At the time, I had no clue what that meant. And I thought it meant that I'll be around for the second coming. I was like, cool.
Yeah, you lost some more Mormon cred points.
I know. I'm bad. You guys just pull the plug right now.
No. This is too good to just... Yeah.
It's all tongue in cheek, you realize,
right? I know that.
So you guys heard those two, or you heard the one about being called home from your mission early to defend the Constitution? Did you guys hear that one?
Yeah.
I heard the other one, the two prophets in the streets of, you know, when the moon turns to blood and, you know, half of Jerusalem gets overtaken, but then two prophets die and then get resurrected. Glenn knows what I'm talking about. Yeah.
But, like, you knew actual people who had that, or you just thought
it was... No, you heard stories about people who knew them. It was the folk.
No, so...
7 degrees or 6 degrees of separation.
I was 2 degrees. I have, like, a crazy story I should have prepared. It's in my mission journal. I'll have to dig it up. But I became really good friends with... Actually, I wonder if I should be careful with this, just because, like, I still respect my mission president, and he, like, confided in me this way. But it was just such a fascinating story because...
Get over yourself.
Because now you're going to realize that he lied to you.
Well, of course he did. I know that. No, well, maybe he didn't. Maybe he was tricked as well. But he used this story as a way to teach me a lesson that not every missionary got. And I felt so special about it and, like, promised to never repeat it. And here I am setting myself up to have to say something, right?
No, all this is going to do is other missionaries that were in your mission that heard the same story from the president will go, dude!
You too?
I thought I was special.
So the story goes that the prophet at the time ran into a conundrum because too many patriarchs had promised, you know, that more than two people... Well, each patriarch only does it for two people, but then if you get more than one patriarch who does this, then there's more than two people who have been promised that they're going to be the two prophets, you know, arisen from... the streets of Jerusalem. And this came to the attention, it got found out as patriarchs communicated with each other, and all of this gets, like, archived in the great vault of joy or whatever it is in the mountain. And so somebody was doing their homework and sifting through documents and found out that, like, way too many people had been promised this, and it's only supposed to be two, and, like, we need to pull the plug on this with the patriarchs all of a sudden, and how are we going to do it without, like, discrediting the whole, to use a business term, value proposition of what the patriarchs offer.
Yeah.
Apparently, so my mission president was part of the inner circle of the, you know, the team that had to deal with this crisis, and figure out how best to, you know, mitigate the damage that had been done while still managing to perpetuate the value of patriarchal blessings. So it was all kept pretty hush-hush, as the story goes. And, you know, maybe I'm not the only one who's heard it as he told it to me in that way.
I can't understand for the life of me, Bob, why he would have told you that story as like a faith-affirming example. unless he was just trying to boost his own personal cred to say, this is how tight I am with the brother in yo.
Yeah.
Well, there was certainly some of that, but it was also he used it as an example of how even at the higher levels, you should be aware that working with God is still, you know, not a direct channel. There's some nuances, and this doesn't diminish. When I heard this and we had to work through it, it only strengthened my testimony because the really important things are still done the right way, and there aren't any real big mistakes. Even the big ones teach you that God has a plan. And like, he fluffed it up in that way, and I bought it at the time, but I have like since reflected on it at different stages in my life as I've also gone through my disaffection, as just thinking like, oh man, that was a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
But you know, one that was easy to, you know, tuck under the rug. Nobody needed to know about it. I felt special at the time.
Yeah.
Now you guys are like, eh. Of course that happened.
I'm sure that would make me feel special if somebody told me that. It's just all kind of, I don't know. Like you said before, when you look back on it, it's hard to look back on it with the same eyes. It's just silly now.
But
right?
But that's the brilliance of Mormonism, and you know, especially modern day Mormonism and the patriarchal blessings and all these things, is that they really legitimately help you feel special. Everybody wants that.
And it works pretty well. As long as you color within the lines and you don't share it too much, or you don't see blessing 222 before 223, which is yours. Yeah. And you know.
Do you think that, sorry, I may be a little slow. Maybe that's why they tell everybody don't share it all the time, because then everybody would know how similar they all are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's definitely one reason. It also gives you the sense that it's really, really sacred. Mm-hmm. Which I never quite understood, because, like, Joseph Smith supposedly, I mean, I guess now that I know the history better, he didn't go around telling people about the first vision, but we published that story about the first vision and proclaim it as one of the first things we talk about as missionaries, and that's supposed to be the most sacred thing ever, but we're not allowed to talk about other sacred experiences. There was always a little cog disc there for me. I didn't quite get that.
Do you think there's any people that, I mean, I don't think this really applied to me, but I could see certain people with certain personality traits looking at their patriarchal blessing and seeing that, okay, so it says you're going to be wealthy, and then you got this guy that's just makes bad decision after bad decision and is just floundering to support his family. Do you think that, you know, some will look at that as pressure? That, you know, because all these blessings are contingent on your righteousness. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's any kind of psychological damage done with people where their patriarchal blessing doesn't pan out and they worry it's because they're not righteous enough.
Well, I can say from mine, yeah. It said that when I married my wife, that as I knelt across her at the altar, a burning confirmation would enter me that would further convince me of the truthfulness of this work. And so, you know, I got my patriarchal blessing when I was 18 years old, and I got married then, you know, I was almost 22. And so it'd been about 4 years that this had been sitting and building up. And then as I knelt at the altar waiting to feel this overwhelming, powerful feeling, I didn't feel anything. And I felt really guilty about that. And I thought, okay, did we fool around too much before getting to the temple? And maybe we should have told somebody and we didn't tell somebody. And, you know, So I thought that I must have done something wrong. Or, you know, heaven forbid, is this the wrong person? Have I picked the wrong person? And, you know, we were married for 17 years. But you know, was it the wrong person? Was it? It wasn't who God expected or wanted me to, because I thought that it was. You know, it just, yeah.
Actually, now when I think about it, there was one thing that was a minor nag at my conscience. Is one of the things in my blessing was that you will be blessed with the ability to bear your testimony often, both publicly and privately. And then as I, you know, went down my path as a Mormon, I hated going up to bear my testimony. I was it was so rare for me to go up on fast and testimony meeting to bear my testimony. And then, but I always had that twinge of guilt every fast Sunday because I would think about my patriarchal blessing, saying that it was my duty to do that.
Yeah. And mine told me that I had a special.
I totally forgot about that.
Mine told me that I had a special talent for genealogy. And to do my
that's a guilt trip. Yeah. That's the worst guilt trip in Mormonism.
Yeah.
That's more than a guilt trip. That's a shit sandwich thing.
Oh, I think mine said that too.
Yeah. And I hated doing that. And I had a cousin who was awesome at it. And you know, so like anytime I would go and do something in the archives, I couldn't find anything that hadn't already been found or taken care of. And so I just ignored that part. But I thought, what is this latent talent that I haven't discovered yet? I don't know. Someday I'll do it, but yeah.
Wow.
Well, I threw mine away.
Yeah.
Because I was angry, and I just didn't want anything, you know, that had to do with the church. But I remember thinking when I threw it away, like, it was hard. Like, what if it's true? Like, mm-hmm. What if it's true? And then, what does that mean? That I'm just throwing this out. And I think that that kind of speaks to the whole experience in that little, you know, however many three page little blessing. Like, if these things are true, how awesome could it be? But do you really want to buy into it? I don't know. It's just,
yeah. And how, and
it's conflicted.
And how big of a shit are you for rejecting something so special that came directly from God?
Yeah.
You know, that in this moment of weakness or whatever, you throw it out and you end up forever missing out on these blessings that God had stored for you. But that whole mentality is built into the way that they're presented to us and the language that's in there, that all these things are contingent upon your faithfulness. And
I think it'd be cool if you could do some sort of anti-patriarchal blessing, or like, not anti as in like negative, but like opposite. So like if you
predict everything that did happen to you in the past and that's all wrong too?
No, no. Like if you follow what you think you should do, as opposed to, you know, holding to the iron rod or staying with the church, like if you just do what you think you should do, if that means leave the church, you leave the church, then, you know, you're not going to know that this stuff is going to happen. You're not going to know if you're going to be blessed, and nobody's going to pretend that you're going to know those things. But here's what you will have. Like here's what you will know, but you can't do that because you don't know. But
you could know.
I don't know if I'm making sense.
You are, actually. I think there's enough that you could dance around it, and it'd almost be like a sweet irony, because you'd still be saying not that much, but it would be a lot better for the person on the receiving end than the other version of the not that much.
I think it would be more it would be special to hear that, like, you could have that confidence just in yourself of like listening to what you know you need to do in your heart, and that you're going to be okay.
Exactly. I like it.
It's sweet.
Okay.
Hey, so can I know we're pretty much done, but I just found this one little passage in my missionary journal, which I think is hilarious, because I actually wrote it down, this story, and the way I wrote it is just so funny. It's just like a few sentences. So I was feeling so special because, you know, my mission president and the mission president's wife took me out to dinner for my 21st birthday. Like, that's what they did that night. So this is how I wrote it. I had a dinner appointment at 6:30 with President and Sister so-and-so. They were taking me out for my 21st birthday. We talked about so many things. President has had a life full of so many rich experiences. One story was so interesting. Seven people came to him with their patriarchal blessings that said that each of them would be one of the two prophets in the last days. President turned the question over to President Howard W. Hunter, and President Hunter only said three words: "Those damn patriarchs."
Oh.
What an interesting story. It's not one everyone should know. I have been told to keep it to myself.
You're so special, Bob. You get all these special things.
Were you AP?
That's awesome.
No, I wasn't, but I was...
Why were they taking you out for dinner?
I was still pretty special. Even though I wasn't AP, I was the longest running elder in the office during a mission president switchover. So the new mission president and his wife took a liking to me, I think.
But they like knew your family or something, right?
I mean, his patriarchal blessing clearly spells out how special he is. Yeah. He's special.
I know. Can I just reemphasize how special I am? I don't think I've really made the point.
but it must have been something where they knew your family.
Yeah. Allison doesn't know that either, because I am special in even more special ways. Yeah. It's true.
And I was going to ask you, you mentioned that your patriarchal blessing talked about your wife. I mean, did it say something that you're going to meet her on your mission? You know?
No, it didn't. I mean, it didn't go into that. I mean, the one line it says that I even underlined because I thought it was so important. It says, when the time is ready, be well prepared that you may go to the temple of the Lord with a young woman of your choice.
Of your choice.
Oh, wow. That's one thing you get a
special.
Yeah.
Special.
Not an arranged marriage for this guy.
Wow, nice.
So you're going to be sealed there to her as husband and wife for all eternity. And then it has this section about know also that your future wife is to become a queen to your posterity in the celestial kingdom. Treat her with all the love, honor, courtesy, and service that would be appropriate for a future queen. And then I bless you that she will be a great support to you as you endeavor to fulfill your responsibilities as a father, as a husband, and as a holder of the higher priesthood.
Yeah.
You are part of a royal chosen generation, Robert.
Yeah.
This is true. Okay, I could go on forever. I'll stop. It's just,
you know, as I was looking for my patriarchal blessing this afternoon, I went through this folder of, you know, genealogy stuff from my ancestors. I've got a patriarchal blessing going back to like 1895.
Whoa.
Or something from one of my grandparents. Like I've got several grandparents, great grandparents, great great grandparents. They're all the same. You know, it hasn't changed all that much. And it was just, it bored me. Like reading through these things bored me. And one, because I didn't know most of these people, but like one of my grandmothers, I knew her life very well. And the things that it said to her when she was 16 years old was so not what her life became. Like they talked about her being this sunshine personality. She was cranky.
Well, she was following the spirit then.
Apparently, right? I don't know. You know, it said things that, you know, in retrospect, you can go back and you go, oh no, she didn't live to do this. No, she didn't do that. And just, yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
That's got to be hard. Like, I wonder if you could talk to somebody who's like older, you know, a much older generation, to look back on their patriarchal blessing and be like, you know, even if it was a believing member, to ask them, what do you think about that now? You know, if these things have not come to fruition, what does that mean?
Well, I think we've kind of covered that the things that...
Well, but that, we're ex-Mormon. Like, we don't believe anymore. And so we obviously were not faithful.
No, but I mean...
The
believer will say... Yeah, they'll spin it and they'll say in the millennium this will happen.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
We'll be able to raise those kids in the millennium. We've got a whole eternity to live and to see these blessings fulfilled. There's...
Yeah, you know, that's true.
There's all kinds of ways to maintain faith. You brought this up early in the conversation, Randy, about the banal things that we take to mean something significant and grand. And I'll have to dig mine up. I've got to find it somewhere. But there's some line that's really straightforward. It says something like, "Pay attention to the prophets and church leaders, listen to what they say, read their words. Therein, you will hear the voice of the Lord to the children of men." Okay, pretty straightforward. If you listen to them, you'll hear what the Lord's saying to the children of men.
Yeah.
But like, I twisted that around to be like, wait a minute, is that saying that I'm going to be the conduit through which the Lord communicates his message to the children of men? Therein, you will be the voice of the Lord to the children of men. Oh, no, hear the voice of the Lord. So I'm like hearing the voice of the Lord that I give to the children of men. Like that was just a measure of my own ego and ambition.
Yeah.
And like,
but it's still, you still exhibited that Mormon trait of extrapolating meaning out of something that is so common. You know, you could substitute whether it comes from the voice of my servants or the Lord, it is the same. Yeah. And it was just a more flowery way of saying it. And you just like dissected it and then
how can I
extrapolated.
Make, how can I make can this I make validate this about me and my specialness even more?
Right. You know? Yeah. Like, have you guys read Under the Banner of Heaven?
Oh, yeah.
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 So podcast. Not saying that Glenn's crazy, but like if you were a little, if you were crazy, you could easily see how that kind of thing, if you see it that way and you, then you could think that like God is talking to you and telling you things. It's kind of scary.
Well, it was funny, you know, because one of the first podcasts I did back in Mormon Expression was interviewing Cabo, this guy that I baptized on my mission. And, you know, so I'm sitting down from him, across from him in person, because I was living in Japan at the time. And we hadn't really seen each other much in, you know, 18, almost 20 years. And the way that he remembered me as a missionary and like the tactics that I used, that now I'm disaffected and so I can see these as manipulation tactics. I was so full of conviction. And he talked about how creepy it was. He kind of laughed about it. Like he could see what I was doing. You know, like if you pray, you will feel the Holy Ghost. And he's like, nah, I don't really want to. No, you will feel it. You will. You'll feel it. And then, okay, he did it. And then afterwards, you know, like he opens his eyes and I've got tears streaming down my face. And I'm like, did you feel it? It was here. Did you feel it? And he's like, no, not really. Like, no. You got to try it again. You got to do it again. Because I was so convinced that I would have the power of the Lord if I was just faithful enough that he'd be able to work through me that way. And oh man,
yeah, because you read stories about the brother of Jared where, you know, the Lord could not, even if the Lord wanted to, the Lord could not conceal himself from the brother of Jared, so great was his faith. And then you hear Jesus saying it just takes all it takes is a tiny amount of faith of the size of a mustard seed and you can move a mountain.
That's such a funny story.
And you're just sitting there just trying to experiment with all of your sincerity of heart. And the guy goes, nah.
I forgot that part of the brother Jared story, because Jesus is like, hang on a second. Did you just see something?
Come take my hand.
Yes. Hold it. Hang on a second. Hey, man.
You saw my finger?
You saw that? Dude, nobody sees that. Holy shit! Foiled again.
Wait till my dad hears this.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, you actually saw that? I'm
Didn't
surprised.
You say wait till my dad hears this?
Yeah. All right.
We have to believe.
So you know, Allison, do you want to
I think I can stand in our way.
We have to believe we are magic.
Hi, this is Dan from Saratoga Springs. You can listen to this podcast, but that probably means you're going to hell. Because if there's anyone with less moral authority than sexual transgressors, it's the goddamn heretics. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. See, I'm being corrupted already, and the devils are laughing at me. Anyone for the closing prayer, please ask for moisture.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.